Welcome to another episode of Undisciplined. Undisciplined is a collaboration between the African and African American Studies program at the University of Arkansas and KUAF.
We'll be bringing you some of the best of what's happening in academia, taking it outside of the ivory towers, connecting it to what's buzzing in popular culture, and give you our take.
Taking the undisciplined approach of Africana studies outside of the classroom, into the community, and onto the airwaves, we invite you to share in research, ideas, movements of scholars and students, and members of Africa and the diaspora. I am your host, Dr. Karee Banton.
And I'm your co-host, Dr. Carrie Nisia Connor.
Let's get undisciplined! Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of Undisciplined. It's so nice to see you guys.
Always.
It's wonderful to be here.
Goodness, we almost, you know, had a foreshadowing to the episode we're doing today. Could you pronounce it so you don't make fun of me?
My name?
No.
What?
The title of the show today?
Black Horror.
Okay, you're going to be the only one that says it.
Let's hear.
I'm not doing it.
Black Horror.
We always had a little foreshadowing. You know, your girl had to always get the blicky and go get her girl.
Y'all, the sheriff's office was about to put Got me you in a slammer.
Up. Oh, no.
Yes.
But it was a scam.
Big jail. Yeah, there's a scam out there right now, guys. Okay. My mama, she laughed at me. She's like, that's the oldest trick in the book. And I'm like, I never heard of it. So someone calls me and they're like, yes, is this Karen Nisia Connor at such and such address? And I say, yeah. And they're like, yes, ma'am, there has been a warrant issued for your arrest for failure to appear in court. Mm-hmm. There has been a $3,000 fine, and you have the choice to either civilly surrender or criminally surrender.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so, so I'm like,
she got out her little card.
So I'm delaying the guy on the phone because I'm trying to get home real quick and change my clothes and
to go to jail.
To go to jail.
I could be going to jail today. Yeah, so I don't want to be wearing this, and I don't want to take all my school stuff with me. So let me go drop it off at home. Mm-hmm. And they tell me, yeah, you're gonna have to pay such and such amount of money. But in the case that you don't have to do that, you have to show your bank statement showing how much money you have in your account. And I'm like, what? And so I'm thinking, well, in my R vest, I got $5.25. And so I told them that. And they hung up the phone on me. Mm. And that's when I realized I was
saved by the bell.
Oh, my goodness.
Saved by the bell. Well, that sets a little bit, you know, give us a little background, because that would have been a real horror story
for
you.
I said I wasn't
going to
cry.
Black people.
I'm about to go in there and sit in there and do my time.
Yeah,
I'm out before Friday.
You were about to be up there like Jody, like, yeah.
And I was going to thug it out and come here and record the episode and then go, but I was like, but then if I don't get to see a judge by 5 o'clock, I might be there over the weekend. Nah, I better go right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Friday. You got to be careful. Yeah, careful of the bookings, beloved.
So y'all be careful of that scam, okay? Because I was about to give the sheriff's county a run for their money.
Well, you
hopefully.
Know.
We'll never know.
Karenicia's story segues into what we're going to be talking today. Mm-hmm. And I am so happy to introduce our guest for today. He is a professor in the communications department. He mm-hmm. is one of my former students.
Yes.
One of my best students.
Aww.
Yeah. I can remember, and I looked this up today, when you came into my class and, you know, you wanted to talk about all those films. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you ended up writing your term paper analyzing Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
Interesting.
And, you know, I was so very fascinated. I've actually used that as to show other students how they could actually, because students usually come to that class. Mm-hmm. you know, having seen Pirates of the Caribbean, liking Pirates of the Caribbean, mm-hmm. but, you know, not knowing how to necessarily do the analysis, right?
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Thank you for creating that.
The paper that kept on giving.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got the chance to do that. And,
yeah,
it was the Pirates of the Caribbean movies and how they contributed to the deculturalization of the islands down in the Bahamas.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So our guest today is no other than Christopher Gillo.
Wonderful to be here.
And I want to let our guests know why I asked you to be our guest today, besides your prowess as a communications professor.
Mm-hmm.
Have been doing this for how long now?
I've been teaching classes up at the university since 2020.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But you were previously at NWAC?
I was. I did 1 year up at NWAC because I didn't start my college career until I was 40.
Okay.
Which means
that's fine.
Nothing from my previous schooling
mm-hmm.
from ages ago actually was able to come across. So they're like, you need something more recent. So I went up to NWAC. I did 2 semesters up there, and mm-hmm. I brought those credits down here to start my communication degree.
Oh, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Right. So besides that prowess, given your extensive knowledge of film,
mm-hmm.
when I started to create this idea of creating a class called Black Horror, I thought of you, right?
That's what you brought to me, and I'm still flattered, by the way, that I'm the one you thought of for that.
Absolutely. And just to kick things off, right, thinking about... why does black horror matter? Why should our guests even think about this?
Absolutely.
What is black horror?
Actually, that was the first question that I had to answer when I was approached by Dr. Benton.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is there's so many different ways you can go. I mean, what are we going to be looking at?
Mm-hmm.
And what I ended up doing was dividing the curriculum up into where did black bodies start in films in the early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the first movie that I'm going to be, well, the earliest movie I'm going to be showing them is the second half of Birth of a Nation.
Okay.
Oh.
Which was not a horror movie when
it
was made.
The D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation or the other Birth of a Nation, Nat Turner?
D.W. Griffith, the second half of that, which shows what the common view at the time was of the Reformation, of it was responsible for the resurgence of the KKK.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to see with this, and why I feel that it's so important is because it wasn't horror when it was made. This was supposed to be a somewhat accurate telling of the things that were going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at it from the lens of 110, 109 years later, it absolutely is.
Mm-hmm.
I have never met anybody who watched this film and didn't go, oh, my goodness. You know,
mm-hmm.
I can't believe that was actually a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the emotions and the reactions that people get from watching this are absolutely in line with what horror is.
But a part of that, because so many of our viewers would have heard of that
mm-hmm.
silent
mm-hmm.
film that...
yep.
Wilson apparently showed in his White House, and he said it was history written with lightning.
Yes, he absolutely did.
Yeah.
Like a whip.
Yeah.
and it was one of those films that helped to kind of whip up the KKK, back into shape. But
so is black horror then defined as like our historical memory of institutional and political violence against black people then?
That is
put into media.
That is actually most of the direction that I decided to go.
Mm.
So moving forward with those films, we start with Birth of a Nation,
mm-hmm.
and then 1933's King Kong,
mm-hmm.
which is you make a face.
I haven't seen the 1933 version.
It is absolutely a take on and. At this point in our history, an indictment of the transatlantic slave trade, where we have people who go across to the wilds of Africa, find the big, strong black beast in the jungle, chain him up, put him on a ship, bring him back over to the U.S. for their own profit. the beast breaks loose mm-hmm. and immediately finds himself a white woman, mm-hmm. steals her, mm-hmm. and is killed by the system,
mm-hmm.
which
oh, wow.
in this case is airplanes right. on the top of the Empire State Building. So looking at it through that lens mm-hmm. at the time, that might not be exactly what they were going for, but that is absolutely the story they ended up telling.
Right. Wow.
But is the horror then, I'm trying to understand, mm-hmm. you know, when we talk about horror, probably people can reference some of the Scream.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
Is that white horror?
That's the thing. It's the white horror, and how might white horror different from black horror, right?
Absolutely.
How is the blackness, how are black bodies implicated, mm-hmm. or white obsession with blackness and black bodies, or black sense of mm-hmm. safety, or, you know, how do you create that tension, that jump scare?
100%. Mm. And as I go through the 20th and into the 21st century with these movies, I had to pick things that did as much of that as I possibly could while still focusing on the idea of horror that not only focused on black bodies and black experience, but was still recognizable by the general populace mm-hmm. at the time.
Mm-hmm.
As
wow.
horror. So
yeah.
the first two, not necessarily, but I show those at the very beginning to say in 1915 and 1933, these were the beginnings of what became American cinema and what became mm-hmm. normal and natural and set the stage.
Popular.
For this, absolutely.
Yeah.
This is what we look back at to see what those things are. So moving forward past that, we get into the blaxploitation era
uh-huh.
in the 70s. Mm-hmm. I have Sugar...
Can you explain to the viewers what blaxploitation is?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So in the, it was mostly in the mid to late 70s, there was a push because of tailing off of the civil rights era and a growing popularity for not only black actors and actresses, mm-hmm. but also for black creators. The studios said, let's let them have some reign. Let's let them write and star in this stuff that, mm-hmm. that they've never been able to write and star in before. The price tag of that was that the creative control ultimately still lived with the executives
yeah.
of those production houses, those mm-hmm. movie houses. So you end up with stuff like Blackula. Which is absolutely, it's a vampire movie, it is horror, and it is absolutely recognizable as such, and it is so over the top, but it...
Haven't seen it.
Oh my goodness. It provides a very good look at what black culture was through the eyes of...
It's the black image
black
in the white people. Mind.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic
yeah.
way to put it.
Yeah, for yeah. sure.
It's they wrote these things for the white audience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of
but
what
portray-
their yeah, 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 a portrayal of their world
yeah.
that they thought the white audiences and moneymakers would take.
But so much
mm-hmm.
of film depends on
with
that,
next,
right?
In the middle, by
wow,
the way.
Wow, wow.
Oh,
so much
of film
of depends on that because you know, I always tell my students, right, as you guys know, I'm a big Game of Thrones mm-hmm. buff, and, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, in this show where you have dragons and you have White Walkers and things like that, you still have black people as slaves.
Still, mm-hmm. yes.
Because you need a base of understanding to which people can relate.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take too much for the film to give you a historical background to say justify why white people are slaves.
Mm.
So you have to go historically comfortable and,
right.
and already present in the psyche.
Consumable.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For
yeah.
public consumption. What?
That's why they think so many black actors, you know, can't carry a movie and, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
Mm. Which has been proven wrong over
yes.
and over and over again, by the way.
Yeah.
So you go from Blackula...
Yeah, I have Sugar Hill and Blackula. Sugar Hill. Are you familiar with that one?
Sugar Hill Gang. A hip.
No.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
Okay, yeah. Nope, not familiar. Go ahead, tell us.
No, it actually takes place in the Caribbean. And the central focus of it is a black woman who is trying to defend her livelihood against organized crime, which are all white guys, by the way.
Okay.
And turns to Voodoo and Obeah to raise zombies of former slaves, complete with still running around with chains on them.
Wow.
To go enact her will and defend her livelihood.
I love zombies. So
I don't know, love zombies, but I love this premise.
Yeah. I mean, and so once again, as you're saying, it is absolutely mainstream horror. It is absolutely recognizable as horror.
Right.
But what the horror is based on is white people being
scared
and chased by, you know, reanimated black bodies
by
the enslaved folks, absolutely by their past,
and maybe a bastardization of African diasporic religious practices.
100%
for sure.
Yeah, because voodoo and Obeah, right, as African diasporic religious you know, practices, how white people who encountered these kinds of beliefs in the Caribbean just thought of it as Africans didn't come with any religious idea because Christianity or Western, you know, Judeo-Christian values were the only thing that mattered.
100%. Yeah, the main supernatural entity in this one is Baron Samedi. Right? Complete with top hat and cane and, it's terrible. And it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And in looking at what are these representations, how has media shown these things, and what choices did they make to do that? And now we jump from there to Tales from the Hood.
Yeah.
Now you're more familiar. So Tales from the Hood is a movie. It's an anthology movie. There's either four or five. I don't remember which.
This is different from Tales from the Crypt.
It's the same idea as Tales from the Crypt, only it's Tales from the Hood,
where
all of the stories are scary and they end up, you know, terrible things happen, but every one of them is based directly around the lived life experience of
black folks
in the mid-90s.
Mm.
So we have, in one of them, you've got a police officer who over-polices and over-use of violence in black communities. You've got a drug dealer. Mm-hmm.
The dolls and the... Wait, no, is that the
That's police? The second one.
That's the second one.
The second one.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I want to ask our listeners, you know, at this point to write us and tell us if you've seen any of these films.
And
we know that you may have seen some of the other mainstream horror films, but have you seen any of the black horror that Mr. Gillow is kind of pointing out here?
And there's four more movies that we watch.
Okay.
We have Candyman.
Candyman. I know that guy. His face is very scary.
Yes.
And I've heard that. What do you do if you do something and say Candyman in the mirror? Yeah,
three times.
Okay.
And then he comes and gets you.
Yeah.
It's like a black Bloody Mary. It really is just a direct take on.
And a white woman who.
And a white woman who is trying to. Chronicle the black communities and their myths and their histories, and she ends up falling prey to this stuff. And I'm also showing the other Candyman, not Candyman 2, but you have Candyman in 92 and then another one called Candyman in, I believe it was 2016.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
That is a direct sequel. It is the same place, Cabrini Green, so on and so forth.
I know about Cabrini Green. It's in Chicago,
20,
right? The housing 20, project?
20-something years later. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
So it's, and I'm not going to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen them, but there is a direct tie between these two movies, and I believe it's very important to do that because we end up taking a very close look at the weaponization by black folks of that history that they have to help fight against people who would try and keep them down.
Wow.
It's weaponization
of black folks to fight against the people who would try and oppress
of the history.
Absolutely. Yeah, they weaponize their own history.
They weaponize their own history. Okay.
Which is, and the other two I have are Get Out. which
let's stick a pin right there, Playboy. Mm-hmm,
which I don't think it's possible to not.
Because that's what everybody knows, Chris.
100%.
For me, that was like the beginning of the a surge in, or well, let's see. The emergence of black horror for me. You know, Get Out, and then the next film, it was like Nope.
Us.
Then you had Us, and then you have Them, Lovecraft Country.
Lovecraft Country.
So it just, all of these kind of came out one after another. Yeah. And so it's my first idea of thinking about this this ideological violence that black folks are using to convey that we are experiencing horror in American life.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely right. That is 100% right. And that's why I think, even though it has been talked about a lot, Get Out is so important for that. Mm-hmm. At that point, what I'm touting these films as is black experience as horror.
Yeah.
Because especially with something like, yeah, and you've seen Tales from the Hood.
Yeah.
Those situations are not out of the ordinary.
Right.
For people who look that way, who live in those
especially
spaces. Especially at that time in the 90s. I mean, it's so much. Mm-hmm. So much happened in the 90s as far as that's concerned.
Well, you know.
And are we not giving credit?
Here's the pushback that one of my friends, I don't know if we had this discussion. I think we did. But one of my friends absolutely do not like Get Out.
Okay.
And he's a film producer. Mm-hmm. And his beef with Get Out is that he believes that Peele never sets anything up, that he implements empty premises.
Interesting.
Yes. So the audience has to fill in the assumptions, right? And that as a director, right, he's doing a kind of politicization, you know, and so it forfeits that, you know, the kind of luxury, right? And that maybe there should have been a little bit more voyeurism in there and all of that kind of stuff. But ultimately, he says it's not very scary. It's not very good. It's like Peele ultimately shied away from the weighty source material. Either that or the arguments for the satirical metatext he was hoping to articulate just got too dense for the time he'd allotted, right? He said he thinks it's a great concept. It's just unfortunate that Peele doesn't
unpack
the abilities to pull it off.
Goodness.
At that high level of metatextuality.
Interesting.
Not yet anyway. There were so many opportunities, according to him, to exploit arguments from each side while maintaining the tension necessary for horror thriller films, right? But he didn't or couldn't push the boundaries, and in the end, it turns into lazy filmmaking and requires the audience to do too much
of
his own
interpretation,
right? He thinks the main problem, the movie is provocative in the wrong ways. Instead of facilitating a dialogue about race and all that comes with it, it facilitates more of a dialogue about, you know, other things. He could have cited film precedent, use some more of the kind of expressionism, you know, the spiral theory. You know, he's into that kind of a German expressionism, the scream, you know, the spiral staircase, that kind of a thing, the psycho, that kind of a stuff.
Yeah, going all the way back to the cabinet of Dr. Caligari back in 1912.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So I hear all of these arguments. I hear them, and I can see where they're coming from. What I really get from that is him saying, this isn't the movie I would have made.
Right.
Yeah, when you go to the conference and people are like, I have a question about your paper. It's like, how about you go write that paper, ma'am?
Right. No, absolutely.
I think it sounds like the writer, he wanted the writers to explain a little bit more the thought and have an opinion on and make a judgment about interracial dating. But I think for me, the point was well made, and there were lots of discussions within Black Twitter and beyond about, you know, like the impact of interracial dating and what it takes for Black men to pursue love outside of the Black community and even Black women. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the conversation
kind of conversation, but not necessarily.
But it didn't provide a Black agenda for going forward with interracial agenda or with interracial dating. And maybe that is the criticism there.
Okay.
He was suggesting that maybe this could be a sequence, and he referenced Wes Craven's New Nightmare as something that didn't have initial success, but later on, you know.
Oh, yeah, it became a cult classic eventually. Yeah. So I'd come at this from two different directions.
Okay.
Okay, because it sounds like really he's making two different arguments here. One, that he doesn't feel that it was set up successfully as a horror film.
Right.
And the second argument, as I heard, was that it did not succeed at being an argument for, against, or about these societal issues.
Right.
That you know, so he says you didn't focus on one half of it enough, and you didn't focus on the other half of it enough, which seems a little bit, you know, hard to me, because at that point, you're looking at a, you know, 4 or 5 hour movie in order to be able to do that. I would come back from my own personal opinion and say that some of the most classic horror movies that have been successful and have been touted as the foundation of what horror is in American cinema had a lot of what he is claiming are issues. Black Christmas, Halloween, Friday the 13th, Psycho. I mean, let's just look at Psycho. They didn't give us any information in there, and they made us fill in all of our own blanks throughout the entire movie. And it was, in fact, the lack of information and the lack
that
of,
that made it scary.
Of voyeurism, as he puts it, that allows us to live in that space and be as confused and uninformed as the people who are the victims in those scenarios. So if we're just looking at historically what has worked as successful horror and what has not, I think he made a choice, whether it was the right choice or not, but he's made a choice that has been successful in the past. As far as his take on the societal issues, I would have to just point at the fact that when I started looking up this class, I found no less than 2 whole college courses devoted entirely to the movie Get Out. Different colleges, different instructors, professors, both of them women of color, that had created an entire course just to analyze Get Out. So that doesn't happen if there's not discussion to be had that is raised by that piece of media. So if he didn't see it, that's fair. But I would put him in the minority as far as the people, the scholars, the society in general. Lots of people got lots of stuff out of it. So at the end, as I said, I think it just boils down to he would have made a different movie. He would have gone a different route, which is completely valid.
Yeah, it is. You know, and thinking about it, like if there was some concrete answer or perspective that he was offering, I think it would have started an argument rather than a conversation.
And I think that's a fantastic way to put that.
Yeah. But I guess if you're making that, you know, that black horror is decidedly different from white horror, that necessitate a particular set of circumstances. What is scary for black people is fundamentally different from what's scary for white people. Your eyes lit up when you said that.
100%. So the last movie that I've got on here, and you bring this up very well, I'm showing them a movie called The Blackening.
I've heard of that, but is that the one with Kiki?
I don't
believe
Palmer
so.
Kiki Palmer was in Nope, I believe.
Oh, Nope, okay.
The Blackening, is that the group of black folks that
go
on a little retreat?
Yes, in the cabin and the board games and whatever. It came out last year.
Oh, yeah. I see.
And this movie centers around how black bodies are viewed in horror films. And it is simultaneously satirical across the top and so much analysis and truthfulness running in the implicit
portion of things. Is this when black people are the first people to die, or is it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And which ones deserve to die first?
Right.
Which ones do we suspect as being the whodunit?
And you end up with a lot of, and this is what I wasn't expecting when I went and saw it, a lot of infighting about what who is the blackest person here?
That's a conversation.
That is absolutely, because the first thing that happens as far as something bad is going to happen is they are forced to pick and choose who the blackest person is, and that's the person that needs to die first.
Yeah.
So you
need to watch this.
Right. So they start systematically denying their blackness.
One guy says, I voted for Trump. Right.
The blackening
what
is happening.
What were some of the other disclaimers?
There was, you know.
I like pumpkin pie.
Yeah, I've never dated a white woman. things like, it seriously. So I was, yeah. Right across the top, it was very funny. Lots of comedy, lots of humor. But then you look at these arguments are being made because societally, within that portion of society.
Right. These are heavily charged topics.
100%.
We're having that conversation. Yeah. And even like myself being a professor, mm-hmm. sometimes even my proximity to blackness is questioned because of what I do. Because
we're in the system.
Right.
Yeah, we're not in the streets, even though I like to talk like I am.
I'm curious. So that's the last movie that you all look at?
Well, that's actually the first movie that
I'm going
to show.
Okay.
But that is the most recent
You're watching
movie.
These with your students?
I am. We're that's watching so, them in oh class. So I have
Can
three,
I come?
Oh, please. Okay. Yes, absolutely. Tuesdays from 2 to 4:50. I intentionally set it up so that all of these movies are somewhere right around an hour and a half,
okay.
an hour 25 to like an hour 40. And it's a 3-hour block or just shy of a 3-hour block. So we come in. Okay, we're all here.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Start
I put the movie on. We watch the movie. And then we've got 45 minutes or an hour specifically dedicated to, all right, tell me what's good, what's bad. Is it accurate? Is it not accurate? Mm-hmm. Should we not even be watching this movie?
Yeah.
Because these are conversations I want these people to have.
Who are your students, though?
Oh, my goodness. It's actually more evenly split than I thought that it would be. I've got about 60% people of color. And the only thing that makes me a little bit unhappy about the diversity within that is that I only have one male person of color in there. All the rest of them are female or female presenting folks.
Yeah.
But the rest of them are there because they have done things with, you know, African-American studies, you know, the cultural requirements for Fulbright, so on and so forth. Or they are communication majors. I have a few of those who just really want the film stuff. And there is nothing else that we offer at the university that goes where this goes.
Yeah.
So the opportunities as presented for them, they are very excited about. And I'll tell you what, I couldn't be more excited about being able to be in this space and to be able to provide that space for them to have discussions. As you said, not an argument, but a discussion about how these things go.
Yeah, I was curious. I was like, what degree plan is this class for? what are they going to do with their lives after this? Gonna make some black horror.
Right.
Yeah.
I really love that. You know, I during COVID, Lovecraft Country came out.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, so I feel like, you know, going back to your friend's criticism of Get Out, you know, that one was to start a conversation. And I felt like Lovecraft Country did a lot of teaching. You know, there was a lot to be gleaned and to learn from that.
Absolutely.
And so, like, the purpose of black horror can be different.
Oh, 100%.
You know, and then you have them that's on Amazon Prime. And, you know, I now that I think about it, I'm going to have to think, what is the purpose or the goal of them? But then it makes me think of movies like Django. Is that considered black superheroism?
It's
or horror mixed with, like, this... You know,
it is. No, absolutely. It's funny you bring up the superhero stuff. That was actually the focus of my master's degree was superhero films.
You know, which film this friend that I kind of shared with you, what he thinks is black horror?
Yeah.
If Beale Street Could Talk?
Yeah, because my man got to go to jail and he innocent and I got his baby.
That film was so beautiful to me.
The music was amazing.
That's
horror for me. I would agree.
Like that's horror.
That's horror for me.
And I am absolutely willing to listen to an argument about that. The reason I find that so very interesting is I also have a Black Love Stories in Film course.
Oh my God.
That I'm going to be doing in the spring.
Yeah.
If Beale Street Could Talk is on that list as a love story,
right,
featuring societally, mm-hmm, physically,
yeah,
you know,
that shouldn't be our love
that
story
angle. And that's the argument. Mm-hmm. Honestly, this is portrayed as, I've got, you know, Love Jones.
Just like how we watch Love Jones and we, mm-hmm, think it's a love, mm-hmm, story as well.
Right,
how Stella
got her groove back.
Grown up and seen, mm-hmm, that it's toxic.
So on and so forth. So, and that's kind of the argument, mm-hmm, to be made.
You put Love and Basketball on that syllabus.
I did. I did. Love and Basketball. So is Poetic Justice.
Oh, my. Ooh, yeah.
Oh, no, there's but so is Porgy and Bess.
Never seen it.
Oh, my goodness.
What is it again?
It's Porgy and
Porgy
Bess.
Porgy and Bess. Okay.
It was a film, a play that was adapted to film. It's got Sidney Poitier. Mm. And
oh, I've heard of it. Yes. The song. What's the song?
I've heard of it either way.
Porgy. Anyway.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes, 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 yes. Like I said, I can't sing. But that is exactly. Oh, Sammy Davis Jr. as well in it. So that era is when that came out. I want to say 74, but I may be off by a year or two either way. Mm-hmm. So the idea that there is so much potential crossover. Fences would be...
That is.
Oh, my goodness. I also had people throw Raisin in the Sun.
Oh, I was just about to say that, too.
A familial love story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As a familial love story.
Shout out. It's at Theater Square right now. Y'all should go catch that.
Go. Absolutely going to go see that. Okay. So, and Dr. Band, both of you actually, mm-hmm, should know at this point that when you are putting together these curriculum, mm-hmm, these curricula, you have to make choices.
Yeah, mm-hmm,
not only do you have to pick,
put everything on there.
Right. Not only do you have to pick an angle, mm-hmm, but you have to decide what are the peaks, what are the high points, what's going to make your point best.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we started out with that question about what is Black horror, mm-hmm, and why is it important, right? And we've been talking about, you know, what Black horror teaches us from Candyman to Get Out, mm-hmm, how it's teasing out maybe in popular media some of these societal issues that we've all, mm-hmm, struggled with for a very long time. It's like almost like a Trojan horse.
It really is. And it's the idea that the representation, not only of the visual representation of, mm-hmm, having people that look like the audience members, mm-hmm, in there, because we want to see people who look like us,
right,
when we go in there, but also the idea of representing society,
right,
in different ways, because we have so much with people of different ethnicities, people of different backgrounds being portrayed in some very, very specific ways over, mm-hmm, and over and over and over again.
Right.
And until we can get out there and say, okay, well, you know, it doesn't really matter what you look like. You're going to be a good guy, a bad guy, so, mm-hmm, on and so forth. But to tackle those specific issues of different demographics,
right,
in a way that is entertaining, at, mm-hmm, least on the surface. That's, mm-hmm, the piece of cheese, mm-hmm, that you wrap around the Trojan horse, as it were, that gets people to swallow the pill,
right,
yes,
of, right, that deeper meaning.
Yeah. Yes.
Is it making the money? And so my question is there a way to see who is actually consuming this media? Because I'm curious, like, are white folks even watching it to get the message, or is this just Black people speaking to the church, preaching to the choir?
That is a fantastic question. I know that I have access to, because I've done the research myself, looking at age and gender, mm-hmm, of the people who are going to see various different kinds of movies.
Right.
I honestly have not done a deep dive into, mm-hmm, seeing if I can find
race,
you know, racial numbers, mm-hmm, as far as who's going to see these things. I think that's fantastic. And now I'm going to have to go look that
up. I'm curious.
So
I
that I can
know.
Give my students that information.
No, yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, because
if the pill's
earlier,
not working,
yeah,
then...
As we were saying earlier, this belief that Black people can't carry Blockbuster, that Will Smith, mm-hmm, has totally demolished, right? Or when we saw Blockbuster, Black Panther came out, and how it was received in various parts of the world. That,
right,
that in itself is a case study, too, for students to think about and to understand. But back to the idea of Black horror, I have a piece here by Nicholas Whitaker, who wrote about why does, you know, Black horror matter. And he says, horror, after all, is about fear. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Philosophers spend a great deal of time arguing about how to define emotions, so it's impossible to give you an uncontroversial definition of fear. Someone will eventually pop up in their head with, well, actually, But here's a good shot at it. Fear is the uncomfortable anticipation of danger. Mm. We fear what we find threatening, what we think will harm or hinder the things we love or like, or health, or loved ones, a pet, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And this definition fits quite well because it seems like horror films are filled with danger.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually physical, like the Michael Myers, the Godzilla that you mentioned, and Dracula will tear you apart,
right?
Sometimes it's also psychological,
right?
Right? Or spiritual, like the voodoo, you know, the Sugar Hill that you mentioned earlier. Part of the danger of a movie like Midsommar is the awakening, the weakening sanity and happiness of Florence Pugh's Danny, which part of what makes possession films like The Exorcist is the loss of the eternal souls and personal identities of the character. What's consistent is fear.
What's consistent is
absolutely
fear.
So when we think about black horror, we have to think about, it gives society, when they're watching these films, to think about, what does black people as human beings fear?
Which is why the people who called me today played on my psychological
fear. This is why you got dressed and got ready to go to jail.
Why I did not start to think critically about them calling me, because the fear and the likelihood that this could be true, and to think about my livelihood and to think about going to jail for the weekend, then it kind of immobilized my senses. Whereas somebody who doesn't have that same relationship to the judicial system, to the law enforcement system, might be like, nah, you tripping, or have more experience to know that that is not how, like when I called the sheriff's department, like, sorry, we wouldn't even handle that if that was the case.
If a white person, enough to know. Call, they're going to call their dad, like, dad, could you please call
Mama,
the
I'm about
lawyer?
To go to jail.
You know, it depends, of course, on maybe class or those kinds of things too. But oh my goodness, the thought of being locked up.
So what's the way forward with black horror? What do you see, just to kind of wrap us up, or what are your students walking away with?
What I'm hoping my students walk away with is the idea that the audience matters, that representation matters, and that we are all, based off our own personal experiences, as you were saying, going to find something different, scary, terrifying, horror.
Yeah.
And to be able to recognize that what I necessarily jump to for horror isn't a universal experience.
Right. Because I don't really get scared by the scary movies like that.
But it seemed like Lovecraft was one of my favorite things. And
I got
don't
scared
like
by that
horror,
one, though.
Right? But the whole idea, right? I mean, we live in Northwest Arkansas, where not too long ago, Springdale was a sundown town, right? Yeah. And the idea that geography could be horrifying and that could manifest as they do in Lovecraft Country in monsters and things like that,
and
right?
And they are in reality. Or in lived experience.
Or buildings. If you peel away the paint, it might bear the imprint of how black communities were burned down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you have to rethink or relive that, how horrifying that, you know, that could be.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A documentary about Tulsa could be horror, depending on the audience.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, yes.
What came to mind for you just now?
Oh, the scene in Lovecraft Country where the little girl is running away from the other little pigtail girls.
Yes.
The,
what are those called?
The minstrel girls.
Yeah, the minstrel character.
That one was good. Oh, but it has also so many powerful moments like I Am, where... what's her name? Say her name.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just this I am in every century, this legacy of black womanhood and strength and power and of coming into self and knowing self.
The part of it where black bodies were used
and
they were being stored down in the basement.
Yeah.
In Lovecraft Country.
Yeah, yes. With Jonathan Majors going crazy in that scene. I had chills on that one.
Journey Smollett sanctioned the black voodoo gods to come and help, and they put the X on the door and they could not pass.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
So
all those symbolisms too, you know, you know, the thing that invoke those kind of a fear, that disorientation, right, those kind of psychic terror.
Yeah,
right?
But if you don't know the history, then it might not come across as that, black or white or anybody else, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I had a, and then there were some things about it that I learned, but there was a point, I had a point of reference of knowledge of all of it. So even if white folks or anybody any from any ethnicity or race are consuming it, you know, if it's not a part of the our memory and our knowledge, then are you just consuming it as horror and not, and instead black horror?
Right.
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
100%. Or you're just being entertained.
Right.
And that is also it, because with most of these media, they have to be able to do both.
Right.
Because you're not going to make the money to get it out to the audience it wants to go out to if you're not able to make enough money off of it. Mm-hmm. So that's that cheese.
Yeah.
That's that Trojan horse that gets people to swallow the pill or take that message with them. Because the outside's fun.
Right. And we haven't got another season of Lovecraft Country far. So.
No. And I don't know that we're going to get another one because of the controversy surrounding Jonathan Majors himself.
I mean, even if he wasn't in it, if the stories were the same, didn't he die?
Just make it anthology and call it good. I would love to see another season
too,
of that.
Me too. Yeah.
Well, we look forward to hearing more about this class and more seasons of how you're teaching about, you know, this
and when the black
consciousness.
Love, when the Black Love class come around, we're going to talk
again. Oh, yeah.
And I look forward to that. I'm currently talking with the students in the horror class about their opinions about what should be in the love story class, because they do have opinions.
Yeah.
And until it actually starts, I'm mutable.
Yeah.
So we'll see what people want to see, and then I will put that in there with stuff that I feel as a film scholar, as someone who understands how this media works, it is necessary.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Does Color Purple have a place in that class?
You it told Harpo to beat me.
It could.
You know, like there's so much different ways of black love: the storgy, the family, the phileo brotherly, you know, the eros, and I mean, with black horror or even black love, you know, my fear is that people will consume it uncritically. So, you know, like that's the only thing that they're thinking. This is okay in the state of love and the state of the reality of black folks. And
you're trying
there's
to give
so much joy
in the movie. There's so
much. I mean, we got to do our homework. You know, like we have to establish for ourselves what this looks like now, what we want it to be. And change black love and mold it in the way that
people
should,
go to these things
we should
to
have
escape.
Experienced it all
they,
along.
They have had enough of us, like, you know, they're going to chat more DEI and all kinds of stuff. So.
I will say that the best ones you go to be entertained.
Yeah.
And you walk out of it. And if you walk out of it asking yourself even one question, you win.
Yeah.
You win.
Not everybody watches movies the way I do. My wife gets really unhappy with me sometimes after movies because I do.
I don't want to see y'all little Netflix posts.
Right. Right.
So our listening audience, we want y'all to tell us, what questions do you have about black horror? What films can you think of? What experiences have you seen in black horror films that come to mind? You're like, man, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
And just join this conversation, because it's so critical, right? And it's become so popular to get into this magical realism, his science fiction, historical perspective of the black experience.
Afrofuturism,
yeah.
And I want options for the next time I teach this class.
So
awesome. Yes.
Give it to us.
Send up some suggestions for Mr. Gillo.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This was an excellent,
wonderful
fun
to be here.
And reflective conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Love this, Chris, and love you.
Love you, too. Thank you.
All right. Until next time, family. We'll see you on Undisciplined.
Thank you for listening to another riveting episode of Undisciplined. This episode was hosted by Karee Banton and Carnesia Connor. It was produced by Leah Grant. Undisciplined is a collaboration between the African-American Studies Program at the University of Arkansas and KUAF. It is available every other Wednesday at KUAF, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Follow the African and African-American Studies Program and the Undisciplined Podcast on Instagram at UARK_AAST or visit KUAF.com to listen to all episodes.
If you liked today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts and rate us.